Welcome to Sport and Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Wiegard. And Sam, we're going to play something that we recorded in 2020, I think it was, with Andrew Plimpton, the late and great Andrew Plimpton. And you might enjoy this or memories of it. And it's sad, though, isn't it, to think that the voice we're hearing is no longer with us.
Fantastic. He was a great mate of ours. And when you go through his CV and realise the mountain of achievement that he did, that he acquired throughout his life, it's fantastic. You know, most of us remember him as the president of St Kilda Football Club, but he did a lot more. He was a corporate heavyweight. He was head of yachting. He did a lot of things, and most respected and loved individual you could ever wish for.
This is Andrew Plimpton, AM, in 2020. Welcome back to Sport and Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Wiegard. And we've got a special guest today, all right? Former president of St Kilda, former president of Sailing Australia, president of Sorrento Kuta Boat Club, and the Victorian Sailing Club, an executive member of the Australian Sports Commission, the Australian Olympic Committee, a big-time businessman. Andrew Plimpton, sitting right next to you there, Sam. Why don't you fire off and ask him a question?
Where would you start, Leon, with that CV?
Well, I'll jump into it.
God, for someone that aspired to being similar to him, and I've had 30 jobs, got sacked by most of them, as you know. But now I've got this superstar. Andrew, welcome and thank you for being with us.
What a pleasure to be down at Jerry's Prince Hotel. The Mitchelton Wines are magnificent, and it's lovely to hear Leon relieving himself from home duties to come and visit us today.
Oh, yeah, what about that? As he turned. But if you knew Jackie's slightly despotic these days. Yeah. He does fall in the line. But more importantly, your good self. I know you haven't been of good health in recent times, which I just learnt. But you're looking well and you're feeling okay now?
Yeah, I am, Sam. Thank you. Yeah, so look, I've had a few issues with my lungs. So very sensitive in this climate. If I was to contract that dreadful disease, I'd be in deep trouble. So with great care, lurking around Melbourne still.
Well, Leon made reference to your business career, your corporate career, of course, your Olympic movement, which Leon will touch upon very shortly. But of course, you're a very, very prominent figure in the footballing world. And of course, you took over St Kilda in the year 2000, I think it was.
No,
was
early
it?
90s. 93, yeah.
93 to 2000, yeah.
That's it.
That's right, 97, of course, the premiership years. And you took over at a period of time when when St Kilda, I mean, were very, very vulnerable. Their finances were precarious. Their playing group was, to be respectful, borderline. But you stepped in, and what were the circumstances leading into you become? Did you have a footy background, or you
basically frightened when it came to football, Sam? But look, I played a little bit at school. Always got concussion, etc. Not a great footballing person. But I've always loved the Saints. I think I had my first membership ticket when I was 13 years of age, and I let it go, but I remember it encased in leather, beautifully handcrafted, and the gate, they used to clip the ticket, etc., like that, and I kept them for many years.
Great emblem, wasn't it, St Kilda?
Yeah, great emblem. So I'd always loved the Saints and became involved with them through their marketing. I was asked to get involved with some of their marketing things. The football club and the social club was separate then. It was a great chasm of relationships, but we managed to do things together. And
so you merged the two together in trying circumstances.
Yeah, look, so just very quickly, guys, is that when I took over, I mean, the social club and the football club had been, I won't say at war, but there had been disagreement for 30 years, and people said you'll never merge them together. Well, it took the goodwill of a lot of people to quietly get it done, which strengthened the club. And Leon touched on the era that I was faced with in 1995, and I just grateful that the members understood and followed after a while, and that is, I used to get up and say, I can give you no guarantees about our future. If we recall, in the mid 90s, the AFL issued these merger deals. You know, they would give each club $6 million if they merged, and hence the reason that Melbourne and Hawthorn got to the altar. It's a separate subject perhaps for another time, but I had to go and find potentially suitors for us, and and a lot of people don't give him enough credit. I do. I went and spoke to the Carlton Footy Club, you know, and I spent a lot of time with John Elliott talking it through. And for all the issues people say about John, et cetera, like that, the Carlton Football Club was fantastic in the sense of understanding.
Well, it wouldn't have been a merger with him.
Well, I'll tell you why it would have been a merger, because the AFL would have provided us, guaranteed additional funds, because the fit between St Kilda and Carlton, one premiership versus 16, in many ways culturally had some uniqueness about it. We probably would have moved to the MCG and, you know, there would have been a lot of things that could have happened. And look, without me going on about it, it was 6 months of, 5 months of discussion.
You could relate to that, Leon. Was Fitzroy offered the $6 million? Because you nearly merged with North, didn't you?
I remember $3 million, actually, Andrew. You might have doubled up.
Yeah, well, it started off and then things increased.
Okay, I just the $3 million stuck in my mind. But yeah. Yes, that was the way they were going to do it. And then you also got the pick of the two player groups, and whoever merged would have been a very strong club.
Yep.
I think you're overlooking one thing, why they got $6 million, Leon. Probably was $3 million, but I think they would have had their Jewish accountant that they normally have in St Kilda. They're very good at making those figures.
By the way, I hope you're standing up, Max. Max, what's your name? Sam, because you're sitting next to a world Etchell champion in sailing. He's a world champion, that bloke,
No, I didn't know that. I knew he was up there. Look, I got sick and I went to sleep after an hour and a half reading his CV. So I got that bored. Well, I tell you what, I've never known.
Another ritual champion from Australia is John Bertrand. You might remember that name.
I do indeed.
I'll tell you another little bit of history about Andrew Plimpton. He went to the same school as one of our all-time great sailors, Jock Sturry.
Brighton Grammar.
Yes.
Brighton.
What a great man, two of them. Johnny Bertrand and the great Alexander Sturrock. Jock Sturrock, what a great individual he was.
I wouldn't have known his name was Alexander. Is that a fact?
Yeah, a great man. I was lucky enough to sail with him a few times in the late 60s when I was just a young cadet sailor down at Brighton. Jock was a dominant member down there, and to be able to sail with Jock Sturrock was a great privilege.
Hey, Leon, why weren't you and I involved in sailing? When you look at the other side of the top end of the food chain, we were more rustic and in the inner city suburbs, where you had to fight for your own, mere morsel.
Those yachts, I don't know whether Sam, but they're quite finely balanced, and I'm not too sure whether you could sit right in the middle.
You're not referring to my corpulent figure, are you?
I did a bit of sailing. I was an emergency.
You would have been
the Jubilee class at Brighton Yacht Club.
You would have been the Davit.
No, every time I used to have to drive from North Ballwin down there as quick as I could to fill in when they were short of, and I did it 3 or 4 times.
Did you?
Yeah, the Jubilee class.
I know them well, Leon. Let me just quote this. Jock Sturrock was walking out in the pier one day with the great Buzz Mosbacher, who was the American skipper who beat him. And the Jubilees were tied up to the pier, and Buzz asked Jock, he said, interesting little boats, those Jubilees. He said, what's their fastest point of sailing? To which Sturrock replied, in irons, which means head to wind, because they were just, they were not a very active boat. So, look, those boats were built after the war, after the huge storm at Brighton, and all the boats ended up on the beach because of the lack of breakwater, etc. And to recover the club, they all got together and designed this boat and built these Jubilees, Leon, to bring back people to sailing.
Sailing.
Yeah.
Leon,
there was a famous, I'll just finish that story,
yeah,
Stanley.
Keep going.
The Jubilees, the absolute star was the Volkswagen dealership owner in Melbourne, and the name just escapes me. He was a
Les Pound.
An old
Les Pound.
Sorry,
Les Pound.
No, this is a longer name, and he. Everybody followed him. One day we were looking down into the below decks looking for another bottle of beer.
Yes,
and we missed a turn that everybody followed this guy, and we missed the turn because we were sort of concentrating on other things. And this bloke, Les somebody, had made a big mistake. and they all followed him the same way, and we finished up in front.
Les Patterson.
Les Patterson.
I just thought I'd break up if you leave.
Now, it brings me on to the to Sorrento and the tell us about the Cuda boats down there at Sorrento.
Yeah, look, I listened to last week's podcast with Bobby and the introduction to the Cuda boats, and it was a beautiful introduction, Leon, in the sense that down there, there's a guy called Tim Phillips who has looked after and created the revival of this class. Those Cuda boats were originally designed for fishing, you know, to bring in the Cuda boats. And the interesting thing about them all was that the bigger the rig in them, the faster they went. And if you had the fastest boat, you were first to market to sell your goods. So you got the best price. So on these, there's two types. There's a 24-footer and a 26-footer with bowsprits, etc. You know, about 30-foot long. So they kept putting bigger and bigger rigs in them to go faster to get a best price. So then the whole thing collapsed and people started to restore them back in the early 80s. So here's a statistic. It's the largest collection of vintage yachts in the world at race. And on Portsea Cup Day, on the big events down at Sorrento, you get up to 65 boats on the start line. A new boat costs $150,000 to put in the water, these replica Cuda boats. So high level of interest, fantastic fun to sail. They're sailed by, you know, those that just love the old antique Cuda boats, and also very experienced and successful sailors get them as well. So great fun.
Gee, Leon, how many listeners of Truganini and Wyndham and all those areas, they'll be delighted to listen to hear that.
Sam, they're dirty old fishing boats that have turned into great collectibles.
I don't take it personally. I'll just stray
hey,
in
Sam,
the side then.
Don't forget Switzerland won the America's Cup one.
That's it.
They did. There's no water there, yeah. And who would have thought the best golf in the world would be black? And the best rap dancer white.
Yes.
And the French would accuse the Americans of being arrogant.
What?
And the Germans refused to go to war.
Now, hang on, that's my background there. 1854 or something when the Weigards came to Australia. Hey, let's get Andrew onto the hairy thing of a few years ago. He was on both, in fact, very few people have done this, been on the executive of the Australian Olympic Committee, and also the Australian Sports Commission. And, of course, he's right in the middle of the biggest blue of all time between two Johns. John Wiley, representing the Australian Sports Commission, which is the overriding group, and the Australian Olympic Committee, of course, with the long-term president there, John Coates. And we all know the way that turned out. Well, I won't ask you why you went with the Wiley group, and I know both guys very well, by the way.
Yeah.
Of course, Andrew, but it was a hard decision to make, I guess.
Oh. Why'd you pick the wrong side, in other words?
That's right. Well, I've managed to do it most of my life, Sam. it's a very touchy subject, Leon, but knowing your involvement as president of the VOC and your long-time involvement with the sport, is that I'm never critical of John Coates' quality attribute and what he's done for the Olympic movement in the world and Australia. It's interesting that he's, you know, now the vice president. He's been very much instrumental and deserves all the accolades for being in charge of the Tokyo Commission, of bringing that games and doing all the stuff that he has to do there. But the question is, and, you know, we've all faced it in life, you know, involved with sport, is you can stay around for a long, long time, and somebody's got to ask the question, when do we actually move on and do things? And my view is that John Coates had an opportunity in which he was exercising, and that is a significant role on a global basis. And I was also keen to see an evolution, and you know, an evolution of our Olympians that could take over the role as president. And, you know, we've got, you know, swimmers, we've got a great member of the Van Zandt Club, big, you know, Stevie Hooker, the pole vaulter, etc., all good quality people that perhaps become, have the opportunity in front of them to become the president. And so in that sense, without decrying John's influence and what he has done, I thought it was just time to get there. In regards to John Wylie, look, Wylie has been instrumental in steering the Australian Sports Commission, the extra funding we've got from government. I mean, part of the Sports Commission, Leon, as you know, is the Australian Institute of Sport. This quadrennium, we're going to be putting $600 million into Olympic, Paralympic and winter sport. So it's a significant contribution. There's always going to be conflicts. I was fortunate enough, long-winded story, Leon, to be effectively to be placed on the Australian Sports Commission at the behest and, if you like, the recommendation from John Coates. And you're right, only John Coates, Peter Montgomery and myself have ever served on the joint boards. It's difficult, but did it for a while, but things evolved in regards to, I think what we all understand in sport, things can't stay the same forever and sometimes you've got to plan to move on.
But if they're not broken, why fix it? And the other thing from memory, I remember that vividly. There was a lot of print media, a lot of the tissues was... And the argument was that John Coates was becoming very autocratic and very dictatorial as opposed to being, you know, being consent and...
And Sam and Leon, you know, I don't want to drive that, you know, discussion into the negativity of it all, but you're right. I mean, when you've been in a job for that many years, you start making a lot of decisions by yourself. And look, John was also, this wasn't a job that you did for nothing. I mean, John was paid extremely well. I don't want to be critical, but in the sense that his honorarium was, you know...
Significant.
Was, you know, a significant amount of money, 800,000. And in the world of first world countries involved with the Olympic movement, he was the only one that was being paid an honorarium. I mean, Germany, UK, USA, it was a great honorary job. Now, I'm not decrying John turned down a lot of opportunities in his legal career, but you just take note on the way through. Sometimes you've got to modify.
On the Olympic movement, can I just ask, sorry, Leon, one question? How corrupt was the Olympic movement? I know those third world countries you're alluding to.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been too difficult, I would imagine, to entice them to vote for me.
Yeah, well...
Is that true, or...?
Yeah, I've never been involved in the international part of it. I was very much the Australian part of it. But if you see and hear the stories of the bidding processes that took place, Sam, the conduct of people at their worst and how people got votes, whether it be the Olympic movement, whether it be the international soccer, et cetera, like that, it's just...
The avarice.
It's just greed. Alarming, the greed and the manipulation. I mean, we're talking about world stage Olympic Games. It doesn't get much bigger then in influence. If we look, you know, I look now, sadly, I spent a fantastic couple of weeks in Rio, and I thought it was just an outstanding Games in the sense of the feeling of the city of Rio. But we know what Brazil's gone through now economically, and if you go and see what the stadia looks like that was used, it's and you see the favelas where all the poor Brazilians are having to live. It's an unpleasant reflection now.
But the same can be said about Athens. I was in Athens not long ago. I filmed in Athens.
Yeah.
But I went to the Olympic stadiums. That mate, they're all overgrown. You know the. Beautiful electronic scoreboards are all almost ripped apart. It's a tragedy what happens after the event in certain circumstances.
Yeah, those days are gone now, and the Olympic, the IOC have now won't allow people to overspend on any of these stadiums. They're promoting joint cities to virtually countries to host the Olympic Games rather than cities. Although they'll have a main city, and if Melbourne were to get the Olympics again, we'd have Geelong involved, Ballarat, Bendigo, Swan Hill, those sorts of places would get a brief, and that was a way of keeping the cost down. So it wouldn't be the same where you've got pretty well all the athletes, not all of them, of course, because yachting's one that's often outside the Olympic Village, and rowing's another. So, but generally speaking, it'd be... a lot cheaper. It's going to be a lot cheaper. And also the IOC are now going to throw in, I think it's something like $3 billion into the successful bidder. So those big cost items are out of the... Anyway, let's get on to Andrew Plimpton himself. And Andrew, your school days at Brighton Grammar, is that a sports-oriented school?
It is very much now. There is a great feeling in that school regarding it's one of the small public schools, but I'm lucky enough to have been elevated to the Hall of Fame down there, Sam. It's a wonderful little boulevard of outstanding contributors.
I can imagine.
But the school is very active in sport, and your ex-coach of Fitzroy, Mr. Shaw, has been coach of the football team down there. You talk about rivalry amongst schools and amateurs, the rivalry that we have had over the years against the Xavier College boys and being able to beat them in the inter-schools premiership has been outstanding.
So, pardon my intrusion, but I see the Jesuits about to depart with Cosca Hall.
Yes, it is.
Yes, why yes. would that be?
Oh, the landscape of Brighton's changing, Sam, as we speak. So, Leon, a school now that puts an enormous influence not only on academic, for which I have to say year 12 was the best 4 years of my life, but the sporting work down there, the sporting attribute, the benefit of bringing people together for sport down at Brighton Grammar is outstanding, and the school should be congratulated. Does a great job.
And the other thing, Sam, that you and I were talking about in respect to Andrew is a businessman that is, so active in so many areas of business and yet devotes so much time to administration and sport. Andrew, did you have a game plan, or do you go into these things half blind, in that, well, I've got a job to do, somebody's asked me to do something else as well, I'll do that. Is there any science to it all?
No science. In fact, I was reflecting with Sam before. We just had a little cup of coffee before the Shiraz down here at the Prince about our good man Jerry Ryan.
The Michelin Shiraz.
The Michelin Shiraz. And I was reflecting, because Sam asked the question. He said, look, just help me. How did you get involved with the Saints? And I said, look, avid supporter all my life. I love that football club. And I used to chair their marketing committee, and I had to put up with people that you both know quite well, that dreadful little Desmond Kelly and others of his ilk. And then I helped do the move, or led the move. The board gave me the delegation because they felt they were too close to it, of that heart-aching move from Moorabbin to Waverley. And after we successfully did that, a group of people worked very hard to do it, is that Jerry and Trotty approached me and said, look, you've done this, it's been a great success, how would you like to become president of the footy? Would you like to consider it? And Leon, I'd never considered it. I thought it would be a great honour because I wasn't even on the football club board then. So I joined the footy club, and within 2 months I was president of the St Kilda Footy Club. I remember Neil Roberts in a players, past players, getting up and saying, we don't know Andrew Plimpton, but we wish him the best. And that was the reality of it all. I was not known within the confines of the footy club.
What did Jerry say to you? Did you ask Jerry why he never took the job on?
Yes, it's a question that I've asked Jerry over the years, and said, Jerry, why aren't you the man for the job? Why don't you take this on? He said, I don't like publicity. And I was sharing with, I was just sharing before, when he was up, Leon, been awarded the big cup for the Americane for the Melbourne Cup, I sent him an SMS message and just simply said, Jerry, who doesn't like publicity now? And of course, we've all seen what he's done with Melbourne Storm, what he's done with Jayco, with his cycling team, and Jerry, very much an institution, and what a fantastic help and supporter he's been of the Saints.
During your period as when you presided over the Saints as your president,
yep,
there were a couple of taxing moments, of course. The pinnacle of his success was the 97 grand final, which, okay, you got beat, I think, by about 5 goals at the end.
21 points.
21 yep. points, but at three-quarter time, I think you led by 5.
Up at half-time, of 20, yeah.
Anyhow, it was a great year. Yep. But there was always that issue with Stan Alvin, and I think the one thing to this day, I think we all concur that Stan's one of the greatest guys you'll ever come across. Must have been a gut-wrenching moment when you had to finally terminate Stan Alves.
Yeah. Look, it's an interesting story. I hear a lot about people talking about culture, and perhaps we might get onto it. I've been just so fortunate to be involved in a league three Olympic teams away in sailing. And what I say to people is, when we're in four walls of a footy club, sometimes there's different stories. And one of the issues you look at in sport is that be very cautious of just looking, if you've just been with, say, one footy club in your life, of just concentrating on that. And one of the benefits I had in sailing was to understand, you know, the culture of St Kilda and where we were. And where I thought that, you know, Stan, who I like and like seeing, and all the reasons that when I'm going to say this, be mindful that he was 5 years as coach and, you know, was renewed and wasn't at this. And I'm always saying, I'm making an excuse. After the year we lost the grand final, I think that Stan got to a point in his life that we became less robust. He became so dominant in his what he was trying to achieve and didn't bring everyone with him. And if we look at after the loss of 97 and the commitment we made to 98, I mean, we had this rule at St Kilda, we had to improve everything by 5%, you know, whether it be marketing income, players, you know, fit, everything was a... Because we all figured that to stay relevant, you had to keep improving. We set this benchmark of 5%. And frankly, I think that Stan just became overpowering, overbearing, and just became dictatorial and overly dominant in a few areas that he shouldn't have been. I don't want to say he lost the players, but there was a lot of tension in the footy club. There was a lot of tension. And I think, you know, the best thing that Stan did was to write his book. You know, the title I'm not so sure about, called Sack Coach. But he wrote a book, and that was bloody good for Stan. And I have no anger towards Stan or disagreement. If I saw him now, I'd be lovely to sit down and go through issues as I have with him. But, yeah, it was a tough time.
Interesting.
A lot of good times, though. Andrew.
Great times.
Football and, of course, you're sailing. And all those things you've been involved with, a wonderful career, and been terrific having you here. By the way, I know that this is a bit on the side, and I shouldn't really know about this, but I did notice in your CV that you're chairman of a crowd called Bitcoin.
Yes.
And I know that Sam's a bit of an investor. What's happening with all this pseudo money?
Well, I'm out of it now. I was many years ago, so well-researched, Leon. He does wonderful research. It's a couple of years ago, I helped these young guys, they were guys, out in trying to get this company called Bitcoin up and on the ASX. You know, I've had some experience of doing listings for companies on the Australian Stock Exchange, and this was one of them that I helped through. But so I resigned a couple of years. I resigned a couple of years ago.
So cryptocurrency, I raised this with Leon last night.
Yes.
Because I've got a small little horse's hair. There's a cryptocurrency company called Zercoins. I don't know whether you heard about it.
No, I've not, no.
Anyhow, it's a cryptocurrency and it's something to do with a blockchain. I never understand it.
Yep.
But I've got a couple of them and they reckon that one day it won't be a Bitcoin, but it might be might augment my income marginally.
Yep.
Now, Leon, we always talk about all the great achievements of this man, and rightfully so, because there's no crosses. It's all tick, tick, tick. It's quite boring. But I did, as I was masticating on my 16-point rack of lamb last night and washing it down with a firkin of my favourite red, I was chipping away, trying to find somewhere that there's... It just can't be true. It can't all be blue ribbons. There's got to be a little detour or side street somewhere. And guess what I stumbled across?
No.
Well, I come across a company called Concept Sports. And part of Concept, guess who was investing in it? Now, this is a rarity, Leon. You may or may not know.
Sounds like Andrew Plimpton, for one.
Well, he was ahead of it. They got him to be chair. But guess who came on board? This is a rarity. There were three former presidents of AFL clubs, namely...
One would be Butters.
Rod Butters. Yeah. No,
I don't know the third one.
Good. Do you care to hazard a guess?
No idea.
Gary Marsh. From
Gary
Richmond.
Gary Marsh from Richmond. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So three AFL presidents were involved in Concept Sports, which was a merchandising company. I think part of their contract was World Series cricket, the Olympic Games. Now, how could you not make money merchandising those two sports? Even, I won't use that as an example, but I noticed that it wasn't all beer and Skittles in that company, and I'd like to ask Andrew just a brief pricey as to what happened there.
A brief pricey.
Well, that's a double entendre.
A brief pricey.
Just a pricey itself, it'll do.
The company ended up being called Beyond Sports International, Sam, and you're quite right. It was founded by Gary March, the ex-president of the Tigers, and Gary, what a great job he did of doing some hard work before this current regime has put the cream on the top and got some wonderful results. Roderick Butters, bought into the business, and they were needing a chairman. They had suffered some substantial losses.
Down to 9 cents the shares, right?
Yeah, it was a tragedy story. And so I went in to help them all and to help Rod. There was another guy called Glenn Casey, who was a vice president of St Kilda, who was involved as well. So it wasn't just Cricket Australia was a major client. We had a lot of clients that weren't so good. We had World Series cricket finals in where a lot of money was lost on merchandise. We had the America's Cup, which was very successful. But for every good venture, Sam, sometimes there's high-risk stuff. And they took on too many high-risk stuff. And the business.
But that would have been your role, wouldn't it? To switch down.
Well, as a chairman of it, I'm there to look over it. I'm not the operator of the business.
No.
And sometimes things work against you. We can't have things just falling your way all the time. And this was a tough business, particularly manufacturing, etc. So I can just say this. Most of the business was sold, but it is a little bit of a scar there, and thank you for raising it, because a lot of people were a little disappointed with this business. And overall, I look back and say we tried our best.
Leon, you can't see Andrew because you're in isolation, but I can now tell you I can understand how he sacked Stan Owls. How you would have made every hard decision. If you see the transformation on his face from our initial conversation to that last 90 seconds that he delivered, I can tell you now there are two Andrew Plimptons. I wouldn't have any difficulty putting him in charge of anything. He'd make the right decision, I guarantee you.
Apart from that sort of story, which is going to happen from time to time, it's been a wonderful career, Andrew, and we do appreciate you being on. Outstanding, yes. We appreciate you being with Sport and Life today. Andrew, we wish you well. I know that Sam alluded to your health problems of recent times, and I know you're on the way back with that. And just a world champion in sailing, a president and successful president at St Kilda, fantastic work going on still at the Australian Sports Commission. Was with the Australian Olympic Committee, so what else could you imagine? Sounds like that's about a cue for us to go.
And an all-round great bloke.
And a member of the Van Sant Club, and what an honour that is.
Member of the Van Sant Club.
Yes.
Love every minute of it.
And on behalf of Sam Kekovich and Leon Wiegard, we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
See you, mate.
Cheers.